From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our La Crosse studios. It's June, and Pride events will be popping up all month long, not just in our area, but across the country and the world. And many LGBTQ people in our listening area, though, still face various types of discrimination. They need support of various kinds, and that's where the Center comes in. The Center LGBTQ Connection offers support, services, a point of contact for LGBTQ people in the greater La Crosse area. And joining us from the center is their executive director, Alicia Schandelmeyer. Alicia, thank you very much for being with us on Newsmakers today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you here. And your big Pride event will be coming up closer to fall, and we'll certainly let people know about that. But I wanted to, since your organization is so visible in our community, offering support and connection and different things to the La Crosse area LGBTQ community, I thought what a cool idea to kick off Pride Month by talking to you about the services that your organization provides. So, for people who aren't familiar, tell us a little bit about the center.
Great, thank you. So, the center is Seven Rivers LGBTQ Connection, or fondly known as the LGBTQ Center in La Crosse. We have been in existence since 2004. We just continue to keep growing. Currently, our offices are on the corner of 6th and Cass, just off of downtown La Crosse. That provides us a really good location to welcome people into the center, on bus routes and things, as well as, you know, privacy for people coming in. Some of the great things we do, we have definitely, obviously, support groups for individuals all the way from youth through adults. We offer a lot of, you know, support and referrals to other organizations, you know, in the community. We have a library that anybody is welcome to come and check out books. We have over 2,000 titles. We had a really amazing volunteer who spent COVID lockdown creating a system of tracking the books. And now we even have like a little scanner and everybody can get library cards. So it's super fun. We have our free clothing closet, which even when we were locked down in COVID, we made sure to stay open one day a week so that people could have access to our free clothing closet. It is available to anybody in the La Crosse or surrounding communities, not just members of the LGBTQ community, but it's a resource that we want to make sure is here for those who are in need, no matter who they are. And then one of the really big things we do is I go out and do a lot of trainings in the community, work with, you know, schools or businesses, different organizations to try and, you know, provide information and understanding for people, because really, hate is bred from ignorance, and ignorance can be, you know, we can deal with that and we can learn and grow and teach. Willful ignorance, on the other hand, is a whole nother story. But so training in the community is probably one of my greatest passions, along with working with the kids. But we do, you know, all sorts of stuff.
I think that over the years, LGBTQ covers such a broad spectrum of different people with different needs and different intersectionalities in our community. And, you know, you often think of, you know, well, this person is gay or lesbian or something like that, and people are like, oh, well, so what? And isn't it great that we've gotten that far for the most part? But there are all kinds of different ways that discrimination comes into play for people who identify as LGBTQ or any of the other, you know, additional groups of people that are not included even in that set of initials. Tell me what the kinds of discrimination that your members face in part of the community. What are like a couple of the big things that you're fighting against right now?
Well, obviously, everyone in the LGBTQ plus community has really experienced some sort of discrimination in the past. But right now, we really have issues with trans youth and transgender individuals of color, especially. There is all kinds of legislation throughout the United States currently that people are proposing bills and laws that are anti-LGBTQ and specifically anti-trans youth. So we want to make sure that we're out there supporting everyone we possibly can and providing information and educating others on, you know, these individuals. And, you know, a lot of times people like to, you know, what I call othering, like, oh yeah, I know my neighbor's friend's cousin is gay. Well, when we come and we, you know, do a presentation or we bring in people and do a panel discussion and talk, you can see that LGBTQ people are just like the rest of you and rest of us and everyone. I mean, we're all just people trying to live our lives and be happy and want to make sure to, you know, really working hard to keep especially the youth, but all of the people in the community safe. Last summer, there was an attack on LGBTQ youth in Copeland Park. And it was, you know, really scary. And a lot of people, you know, they think, oh, this doesn't happen around here. This happens in New York City or, you know, large areas or maybe the South where it's more conservative. But, you know, these sort of things are happening every day in our area, and whether it's, you know, physical violence or just mental and emotional stress and strain, really need to, you know, take care of each other.
The resistance that you find against LGBTQ people in this area, is mostly, you've referenced it coming from conservatives. Does it mostly come based on religious grounds, or are some people just like just not comfortable with something that they're not familiar with?
Yeah, there is a long history between the LGBTQ community and religious organizations. And, you know, we've dealt with some of those things locally, even very recently. One of the private schools did a training for their teachers and staff that was very anti-LGBTQ. And what we did is we then offered a community training so that people can, you know, get the proper information. You know, it's a lot of times people are just scared and uncomfortable with things they're not familiar with and want to make sure that, you know, people get the correct information out there and the, you know, knowledge to, you know, base, you know, your feelings of people on the actual person, not, you know, what, you know, maybe sexual orientation or gender identity they fit into.
What's that like for someone to have like huge part of their identity viewed by large sections of society as something that needs to be corrected rather than something that just is?
It's absolutely heartbreaking. And, you know, it affects every person differently. But one of the, you know, biggest concerns that we have locally as well as, you know, regionally and nationally are youth being kicked out of their homes or not supported by their families. And that can cause irreparable damage to a child. So we want to make sure that, you know, we have information so people are able to, you know, we have a parents group that meets once a month. And they're able to talk through things, discussing like, okay, maybe I'm confused. Maybe, you know, I have questions. Let's learn about things, talk to each other, you know, just kind of get, you know, feelings out, I guess, too. Because a lot of times the parents are confused or they're scared or, you know, maybe they, you know, just are not accepting. But we try and offer as many avenues for people to receive support as we possibly can.
You've talked about educating people and offering people an opportunity to just become more aware of you, of your membership, and the needs of that community and the challenges that they face. I'm wondering how you approach trying to find that sort of common ground, or trying to find a way to bring people to a different perspective when they're coming to you with some version of, look, I'm not trying to be rude. I don't hate you, but my faith, which is my ultimate belief, just teaches me that this isn't the way things were designed to be. Like, how can you counter that kind of ingrained perspective?
Well, we do have a lot of religious leaders that we work with who are, you know, willing to stand and have those discussions with people. Because while I may not be an expert, we do, you know, work with a lot of experts. So, you know, I personally can't answer every question for you. But, you know, I can find somebody that can answer these questions. And when we did our community conversation in response to the training at the local private school, we had a minister on our panel. We had a psychiatrist. We had a medical doctor. We had a trans expert. So, you know, getting people to the point where they can be in front of somebody who identifies that way or who supports individuals and can ask questions. I think a lot of times if you can get people in a room together, they can see, you know, oh, wow, these are just, you know, other humans. And the ability to ask questions is huge. You know, providing the base knowledge for somebody, you know, I know it's even somebody who maybe is not, you know, anti-LGBTQ, but not necessarily supportive. A lot of it just comes from frustration of not knowing. I don't know what these letters stand for. Why do you have to have all these letters? And, you know, so just sitting down with people and going over just like the basics of, okay, this is what gender identity is. This is what sexual orientation is. They're not the same thing. And kind of just reviewing those things, giving them that base knowledge, and then having them, you know, in a room with a panel of individuals who identify as LGBTQ and or work with LGBTQ people. So, you know, that provided a, you know, I felt a very important response to that, because, you know, we had religious leaders there for people to ask questions to. And, you know, we also had, you know, a therapist, and we had, you know, medical doctors. So that way, you know, we have all of those avenues and people, you know, can see, oh, these are, you know, trusted members of my community.
Well, I definitely want to talk about your upcoming event, but I want to, before we move too far away from this part of the conversation, I want to give you an opportunity for people who feel like they need to reach out to you, if the services you mentioned earlier sort of ring true to them and they'd like a place to connect, or if people do have questions and are looking for ways that you can help bring a better understanding to their part of the community, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can always stop in to the center. We're open 5 days a week, Monday through Thursday, and then Saturday. Email and our website is available with contact information, as well as Facebook too. We get a lot of messages via Facebook or telephone. Really, however you want to reach out, we're here for you. And, you know, there's a lot of times people are embarrassed to ask questions or unsure of what words to use. I let people know that, yeah, maybe asking your neighbor something is probably not the, you know, best idea, but you can ask me. I'm not going to be offended if people use the wrong words or terminology. I'll let you know for sure that that's not the word you should be using. But, you know, I can answer those questions for people. And we have amazing group of volunteers that help run the center and run our support groups. You know, so we actually only have a staff of 1.5 here at the center, and everybody else is here on a volunteer basis. So
now I want to take a moment to talk about something fun that you've got coming up. The Pride Family Picnic is an annual event for you, but for the first time, you're doing it in the early part of the summer. Tell me about it.
Yes. So normally the center and La Crosse area Pride we have in September, because we want to make sure that all the students are here and able to attend the festivities. But in June, we decided that maybe we would move our picnic from September to June this year. That way we could, you know, welcome the summer in with a, you know, just a really enjoyable afternoon of food and fun and games. It'll be this year on Saturday, September 11th at 11 a.m. It's going to be at Black River Beach.
And so what's going to be involved in that day? What do people have to do to participate?
Well, they can just stop by, but we will be providing some of the main dishes for food. If people are able to bring something to share, they are more than welcome to, but they don't have to. You can just come, bring your family. It's definitely family friendly. We'll have kids activities and, you know, some different outdoor sports and things. So it's going to be just a really, really enjoyable afternoon on the river. So
the big full-scale Pride event's still happening in September as usual, but the Pride Family Picnic will be moved to this coming, about a week from when this airs. It'll be on June 11th, right?
Correct.
Sounds good. Well, I certainly want to thank you for being with us on Newsmakers today. Alicia Schandelmeyer is the Executive Director of the Center Seven Rivers LGBTQ Connection. Alicia, thank you for joining us on Newsmakers.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I certainly appreciate it. Of course, we always want to hear from you, too. You can email us anytime through the week, newsmakers@wpr.org. That's newsmakers@wpr.org. This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Ezra Wall from our Southwest Wisconsin Bureau here in La Crosse. Pride events are, of course, nothing new here in the Midwest, and now that it's June, we'll see them in communities across southwestern Wisconsin, or covered in the nightly news, or going on down the street. One event in just its second year this year is particularly interesting, though. It's put on by Lake Pepin Pride, and it's their celebration in the park. It's the second annual such celebration in the tiny village of Stockholm, Wisconsin. And joining us to talk about it is the organizer of that event, Jennifer Lindahl. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
So I guess the question that I thought of when I heard of this event going on in Stockholm is a Pride event in tiny little Stockholm. Why Stockholm?
Well, I guess why not Stockholm? We are, as you say, we are a small community, but we are a small community with a big heart. We are a tourist community, so we do have many people that pass through our little town. We have, for example, we have a art fair that comes to, that is hosted in Stockholm, actually, in July, that brings 10 to 15,000 people into our community. So, you know, when I had the idea for Lake Pepin Pride and to have a celebration, Stockholm was because of its location, because of its love for everybody, the inclusivity part of it, part of our community. That's why I chose Stockholm.
I know this is maybe not the result of a formal survey of any kind, but just anecdotally, By percentage, is there a significant LGBTQ plus population in the Stockholm area?
There is, our population, I think we've grown to 79 or 78 or something. That's what our sign says now. But there is a significant percentage of our population that is part of the LGBTQ plus population. As far as percentage, I don't know what the percentage is. But we also have a lot of community. We have a lot of visitors that come from the Twin Cities that are also part of the LGBTQ plus population.
What happened when you first started floating the idea about Lake Pepin Pride? Who did you first talk to about it?
So in the community, the first person that I talked to was my friend Alan, who him and his partner own the Stockholm pie shop. And Alan said, "That's a great idea. You should do that." So I'm actually not, I'm an ally. I'm not part of the community. And so I've never been to a Pride event, not until our Pride event last year. That was my very first Pride that I'd been to. So I really didn't know. I mean, obviously I've seen things on TV. I've read things on internet. I've seen pictures. And so I went to Alan and he thought it was a great idea and encouraged me to plan something. I am very lucky. I have a lot of friends that jumped to help make this happen.
The town you said is 78 or 79 people. What kind of an event are you able to put on in a town of that size? What goes on at Lake Pepin Pride celebration in the park?
So last year we had around 200-250 people that attended. It is a small celebration. We have many vendors. We have lots of nonprofits, and then we have some speakers. So we like to do a focus. So this year, our focus or our highlight is going to be the trans community. So we have a couple speakers that are going to come and talk about. I have my friend Ty is going to be talking, who is part of the trans community. And then we have a chaplain that will be talking. He spoke at another event that was in a community close to ours. And it was a support rally for a young person that was outed in the trans community or outed as trans, and their family suffered greatly and ended up having to move out of the community. And so he spoke there. And so we're going to have him come and speak, and we're going to have some performers as well. We'll have food. It's a celebration. It's a big party.
So when you started this event, the first one was last year, second one is coming up. You talked about it being a welcome event in your community. Did you receive any pushback from surrounding areas?
We did receive some pushback. It was very minimal. I mean, I really don't want to, it's not that I don't want it to ever be the focus. I think that, we're all on a learning journey. I'm certainly on a learning journey as somebody who's an ally. There's a lot of things that I've learned that I just didn't know. And even as a supportive person, there's a lot of things that I didn't know. So I think that I look at people that are afraid for some reason. I'm not saying that their fears are irrational. I mean, I think that we all have fears, right? And so I think a lot of it has to do with not knowing and not being educated. And so I'm really looking at this as a way to not only celebrate those that are part of our community and show our love, but also a way to have conversations. And that's how things change. That's how I believe things change, is to start having a conversation. When you don't know a person that's part of the trans community, I think it's easy to judge somebody. It's easy to read a headline in an article and make decisions about a population and when you don't really know them. And so this is a way to connect and to grow, not only as our little community, but hopefully that it stretches outside of our community.
You talked about some of the speakers that will be there and about the idea that you yourself, even as an ally, are continually learning new things. And this is a big celebration in the park. How do you balance the celebration aspect of it, the just everybody get out in the park, have fun kind of thing, along with the educational components or the more formal part that might exist?
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think education doesn't always have to be not fun. So I think it's really, you know, Ty and Chaplain Quiet Mike, as he's called, I think that when they're coming in, they're coming in to start a conversation, right? So it's not going to be a lecture. It's inviting more conversation. And then sprinkled in, we'll have some performers, we'll have some music. And so I think it's not just, you know, I want that education component. I think that's an important part of, I mean, obviously it's an important part of being a human, is that it's just evolving and learning as we go along. But again, you don't want it to be, you don't want it to just be all that hard and heavy stuff. And I think that, you know, once the conversation happens, or once the conversation is started, the presenter is going to walk off the stage, and there's going to be, you know, hopefully 200-300 people there that, that can ask questions, or they can talk to each other, right? They can have those conversations between each other.
You talked about last year being your first Pride event. Are you hoping that this event draws people who are not themselves part of the LGBTQ community?
Yes. Yes, of course. We want everybody is welcome to come to our Pride event. And last year we had a lot of people commenting that they've wanted to come to a Pride event, but the big Pride events were just overwhelming for them. And so they didn't feel comfortable going there. So that they were much more comfortable coming to a smaller community. And I think that I think big change happens in small communities because there's less people, right? So there's less people. We think about the 70 plus people that are in Stockholm. That's a ripple effect. We're inviting, if we have 300 people come to our community, I mean, that's quite an influx into our community. And if they're all supportive, we didn't have one person last year, not one person that had anything negative to say that was there to cause problems or anything. That's a huge win for us. That's a huge win.
You mentioned that there's going to be some music there. Who's playing?
So we actually have another friend of ours is going to be playing their violin along with some music. We have some drag performers that will be there as well. We have, you know, we're still finalizing some of the last minute performers. It's you know, last year we planned this whole event in 7 weeks, and this year we had a year to plan it. And it's amazing how you think you have everything planned, and then something falls through, and you have to pivot, as they say.
You talked about the draw of Stockholm normally being an attractive place for a lot of tourist activity, people out on a day trip or passing through. What goes on in Stockholm outside of the celebration in the park? What can people expect to experience in your town?
Oh, it's such a cute little town. We have restaurants. We have several restaurants. We have lots of little boutique-y stores. You know, you can get pie and ice cream. You can get a burger. You can get some great drinks. And it's beautiful. It's right. The celebration will be in the Stockholm Village Park, which is right on the lake. So, you know, bring your kayak, bring your canoe, and come down and spend a day. And the surrounding communities too. We have a winery, we have some higher end restaurants, we have other shops throughout the other communities. So there's a ton to do. There's some hiking spaces to go to. Yeah. It's a great community.
Now, I know that your community is on the northern part of our listening area. So for those who are coming from south of you, how do they get to Stockholm?
Oh, so the Great River Road is the way to come. It's a beautiful way to come. You know, we're not far from, La Crosse. I think we're like 2.5 hours from the La Crosse area. And how I come up is I come up through Wabasha and get on the Great River Road. But the Great River Road is the best way to come up.
The Great River Road is just about the best way to get anywhere, I think.
Well, that's true. That is true.
Well, you had me at pie and ice cream, kayaking on the lake sounds like a good time. Is there a charge of any kind for the event or a park fee that anybody should expect to pay?
So our event is free. There's actually camping in the park, I don't know what their fees are. The Village of Stockholm, if you go to their website, so you can come and spend all day. We don't just have the Lake Pepin Pride celebration in the park from 11 to 3. We actually have a drag show as well in the evening, and that will be at Humble Moon Saloon. Which is going to be outside. So it's right behind Humble Moon Saloon. So we ask people to bring their own chair, and there's a $15 suggested donation.
For the drag show.
Drag show.
Okay.
Yes, it's for the drag show.
And what time does that start?
So the drag show starts at 6:00. So it goes from 6 to 9.
And what about the events in the park?
The events in the park start at 11 and they go till 3.
Wonderful. Well, we've been talking all about Lake Pepin Pride's celebration in the park, which is coming up in Stockholm, Wisconsin. And Jennifer Lindahl has been talking to us about that. Jennifer, thank you very much for joining us today on Newsmakers.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
And remember, you can hear this conversation again or stream any of our previous episodes on demand. Just go to WPR.org/newsmakers. That's WPR.org/newsmakers. Of course, you can find Newsmakers in your favorite podcasting app. That's just open the app, search for WPR Newsmakers, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, our email address is newsmakers@WPR.org. That's newsmakers@WPR.org. As you might have guessed, this is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. From Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Newsmakers. I'm Ezra Wall in our studio in La Crosse on the campus of the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, actually, which has just wrapped up its semester, graduates off with their caps and gowns to bigger and higher pursuits all. But we're remembering earlier in the school year in October when several of their theater students were involved in writing and producing a play called Severe Clear, September 11th, From Memory to History. And we talked about that program here on Newsmakers. Well, in recent weeks, that very play has been the recipient of some prestigious national attention. They've won some awards from the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival for original documentary. So looking at the awards that they won for that play, Severe Clear, they won the special achievement of the production of a new work. They won the special achievement in the production of a devised or company-generated work. They won the special achievement in direction by faculty artists. And that's Dr. Greg Parmeter there from the UWL Theater Department. And they won the Special Achievement in Ensemble Performance. That's again for the play Severe Clear, which we heard about here on Newsmakers from WPR. And we are going to revisit that conversation. The assistant director and one of the writers of that project is called Emily Rux, and she's with us today. Emily, thank you very much for joining us on Newsmakers.
Thank you for having me.
And one of the actors in the play is a UWL theater student, musical theater, actually, Adam Bloom. Adam, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Emily, you were telling me that this you've actually recently graduated, so you're an alumnus of UWL now, and this project was just so interesting to you that you wanted to stick around to be part of it. Tell me how the idea for Severe Clear came about.
Yeah, so actually in about fall of 2019, two of our theater faculty, Lori Kinsman and Greg Parmeter, Lori came up to Greg and just had this idea. She was reading a book called The Only Planet in the Sky by Garrett Graff. He is he's a writer, and he has written an article before about 9/11 from the perspective of those who are on Air Force One with the president. And it's just a collection of firsthand accounts from that day. She read that. She was like, this is would be really interesting as a, like a theatrical production. Came up to Greg. They had this idea. They read the book and then introduced it to students as a class. They wanted to create it as a class. It started from one article that Lori read, and 2 years later, here we are.
So there are perspectives reflecting, of course, different people from New York City, from Pennsylvania, from D.C., from Air Force One itself, as you mentioned. How many people's stories have contributed to this work when it's all said and done?
That number is like really hard to count. Technically, I think there's about 188 like character stories in this show, but I cannot tell you how many stories have influenced this show in reading the book, in reading other articles, in researching everything that's happened after 9/11, especially in the world since I was maybe 2 years old when the events happened. I don't know if Adam was even born when the events happened. A lot of the people working on this piece were post 9/11 babies. And so even those stories of like Greg and Lori, like where they were at when the events happened, those influenced how we went about writing this piece, because as people who didn't experience the events hands-on, and we've only ever known 9/11 after the fact in an academic sense, we wanted to do these stories justice. There's probably hundreds of stories that influence this piece, but there's about 188 actual like voices that are heard in the piece.
So Adam, you're an actor in the play with so many different characters represented. Do the actors divide all those characters up? Or, I mean, I'm imagining there are not 188 different actors in the play.
Yeah, we do divide it up. There's like my title is just Actor 7. We clump together different characters and different like stories, as we put it, for certain actors. And it does help out, you know, not 188 different people on stage or large 20-minute chunks where just one person speaking. It's a very interesting way of putting together a show, and from a person walking into it, I actually had the great honor of being one of the early readers for this show in its in one of its first few drafts. So I've seen kind of a little bit of the transition in that sort. It was a very interesting thing to walk into and see that how stories would be portrayed, and just the day itself. It was phenomenal.
What's one of the characters that you're involved with or that you know, maybe I don't want to give away you know, how the whole thing unfolds or how you've put it together entirely, but like is there a part of it that's been especially meaningful for you to participate in?
A specific character, now after working through his name's Lieutenant Colonel Ted Anderson. He's one of the workers at the Pentagon. One of the things that made that so meaningful to me is we got the chance to talk to some people who actually were able to go through and witness these events firsthand, people from New York, and one person who was actually working at the Pentagon when, you know, these things transpired. One of the things that he stated is so many like either documentaries or stories that are told miss talking about the Pentagon, because a plane did hit the Pentagon on that day, and through the stories that Ted Anderson has told that are shown in this play, I feel it's very meaningful to just take a closer look at something that's so forgotten when we look at this day.
Emily, in putting this play together, you mentioned a couple of faculty are part of the writing process and some students as well, and you're all bringing material in, combing through just endless amounts of stories and the way lives have tragically been touched by the events of 9/11. There's a lot that's left on the cutting room floor. How did you decide what gets included?
Yeah, especially with like 10 people working on this piece, there's going to be stories that hit us differently. Like there's stories that maybe aren't as impactful to me that were impactful to a different student. And so we had so many discussions about, okay, who makes it, who doesn't. There was clear stories of who was going to make it, especially those people that, like, I don't want to say are iconic from the day, but their stories are just so important to the day. Like Janelle Guzman, who was the last survivor pulled from the rubble. We had to include her because her story is so significant. Pasquale Bozzelli, he survived and his story is so famous as being like the surfer who surfed down 22 floors. A lot of first responders, and we needed to make sure that we got the Pentagon voices. And of course, people from that were impacted by United 93 when it went down in Pennsylvania. There are just so many stories and we needed to make sure that we hit every single big event. So we needed to make sure we had New York voices. We needed to make sure we had Pentagon voices. We needed to make sure we had United 93 voices. And we needed to make sure that like the story of the president was also there because that was a huge part of the day as well. So yeah, there's a lot of discussions, a lot of just like what propelled the story along. So there'd be a lot of stories that are very similar. So like survivors from the South Tower would have very similar stories from each other. So it was whatever told a different story from their perspective. And if it did, told the same similar story to like one of our main characters, there's characters that are bulky characters that have a lot of their story in this piece. If there is a minor character or a smaller story, I hesitate to use smaller story because all these stories are so important to the day. But one that just didn't have as much like text to it, we would typically cut. There are obviously some like hard cuts that like we fell in love with these people because you're reading their stories and you're reading their words. And these aren't polished stories. These are them speaking. So there's a lot of breaks. There's a lot of awkward sentences. There's a lot of just like humanness in this. So we fell in love with people and we ended up having to cut some people. But I think what we ended up with was a great piece that tells very niche little like pockets of humanness throughout the day that paints the whole picture of 9/11. So yeah, definitely a lot of discussions about who do we keep, who do we not keep. There's a couple characters that I know some of the writers hold very dear to their heart that didn't end up making it in the show. Some moments that we wish could made it, but yeah, it was one of our guiding questions is like, okay, what's pushing this story along? What's pushing us to the next scene? What's pushing us to the next moment? And if this story isn't helping us with that, and it's only holding us back, unfortunately we have to cut it. And we know going into this piece that like, this is not an exhaustive experience. So yeah, it was just hitting those big moments and making sure we had voices from every single area.
What's it like? We all could imagine something that is for all of us history that is long in the past, writing about that, writing a play about it, writing a creative work about the revolution or the Civil War or something like that. What's it like, Adam, working on a project like this when you personally don't have any firsthand memory of it, and yet many, 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 many people do, like perhaps most of the adults in your life do. I mean, this was a very seminal moment. I'm not the only one of my friends, certainly, who can remember precisely where I was when these events began to unfold. What's it like telling a historical story that for a lot of your potential audience, it isn't really history yet?
Yeah, that's every time I step on stage, that's actually one of the things that I think. Just people, most of the people that are going to be sitting out there will have experienced this, whether it be firsthand to seeing it on the TV. It's one of those things that you have to be very careful about either how you say something or, you know, portray it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you do have to remember these are people. Like, these are people that are still, well, a lot of them still alive today. You know, you can't, in a lot of theater, things turn into, you know, oh, let's use stereotypes to help build a character. Let's use this. But we're not building a character, we're portraying somebody. It's it's very weird to think, you know, I'm portraying an event that like I was alive for. I was one, you know, but I this was in happened in a world that I lived in. It's very difficult to, you know, express, I'd say, the emotion of the day for something that I truly cannot grasp. And that has shaped our world so drastically.
This is, if I'm remembering correctly, this is going to be the first in-person production that the theater department has done since COVID shut everything down in March of 2020. What's the experience going to be like for the audience? Are actors going to be in masks? I'm assuming the audience has to wear masks indoors.
Audience will have to wear masks at all times, but the department has done a very good job of making sure actors are tested and they will be unmasked. So they, but there will be precautions set in place. So audience will always be wearing masks. Actors will not be, and there will be like social distancing to a point. So that way we all know we're safe. But yeah, the department's done a very good job of making sure that the actors are getting tested and knowing their status so that we can all have healthily enjoy in live theater, because we all know we've missed it so much.
Well, and that this is different because, I mean, both of you were UWL students all through last year and all through the second half of the year before that. So what has this been like for each of you? We'll start with Adam and Emily. I want to get your reaction too. What has this process been like, having experienced communal theater type events and then having that taken away from you and now being able to come back to it?
This has been a very like a weird sense of deja vu and like an odd transition into what we used to know, which we're used to kind of transitioning to, oh, the new, oh, something that we haven't experienced yet. And it's such a weird feeling slowly transitioning into what we used to do, and what we used to do being so like, oh, that's different. Oh, we're not used to it. Oh, it's like masks off. Whoa, it's weird. It's almost funny to experience that in that kind of a way. But it's also kind of welcoming, and it kind of fills me with a little bit of hope, you know, like we're getting back to what we knew, and people are going to be able to experience again what they used to and what they enjoy. It's and especially with, you know, going through something so, you know, such a different type of production and something that's supposed to, you know, bring such a unique and hopeful message. It's very unique to be experiencing both of these things at the same time. It's, I don't know. It's really cool in my eyes.
Emily?
Yeah, I think I'm really excited to get a live audience back. I know last year they did, they recorded productions. So like the lights were still kind of there. Scenery was still kind of there. Sound was still like the whole idea of a tech week and implementing tech was still kind of there. Granted, it was very like, it was standstill, it was radio plays, it was all that stuff. But I'm really excited to get a live audience back, because being in the audience, being assistant director, I'm not on stage, like, you know, doing stuff. I'm like sitting, watching these guys act so beautifully. It's reminded me why I love theater so much, because it's such a communal activity. Like, you leave everything at the door and you, actually quite the opposite. You bring everything that you are and who you are, like, and what you do and how you're feeling that day. You bring that into the theater. And that's welcomed. And I'm so excited for that to be back. And it's reminded me, like, it's convicted me. It's like, yes, this is why I do theater. This is why I love theater so much. It's because it's such a human experience, because humans are acting, humans are finding truth on stage, and humans are watching. Like, it's such a communal, beautiful come together, and I'm so excited for it to be back.
All right, Emily Rux and Adam Bloom are part of the production A Severe Clear, September 11th, From Memory to History. Emily, Adam, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we certainly not only thank those participants in Severe Clear from the UWL Theater Department for joining us, but also congratulations on the several national awards that it's been recently announced that they won for that production, including the Citizen Artist Award, the Special Achievement in Production of a New Work Award, the Special Achievement in the Production of a Device or Company-Generated Work, Special Achievement in Direction by Faculty Artists, and Special Achievement in Ensemble Performance. So quite a handful of awards there for Severe Clear, September 11th, From Memory to History, from the UWL Theater Department. Congratulations to all. And that wraps it up for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio. You can hear our show each week, Friday morning at 10 on the Ideas Network 90.3. We're on Friday evening at 7 on NPR News and Music 88.9. And of course, we're always online at WPR.org. For Dawn Jewell, I'm Ezra Wall. Join us next time for another Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio.